Welcome to No Direction Beyond, your Starfinder news, reviews, and interviews podcast. I'm your host, Jefferson J. Thacker, and I'm joined by...
I'm James. I write Code Switch.
And you might not know it, because of all the laser beams, shields, grenades, energy axes, and starships, but Starfinder has its roots in the 3.x OGL gaming. Yes, all the way back to Dungeons & Dragons 3rd Edition. And because of that, Starfinder is an open game with a compatibility license and everything. And the advantages that brings to players is access to a plethora of third-party content, and especially quality third-party content. To talk about that, I have invited two of the giants in the third-party publishing space for Starfinder to join us on the show, starting with Jason Nelson from Legendary Games.
Hey, everybody. Make your game legendary.
And our very own Alexander Agunis from Everyman Gaming.
Hi, I'm Alexander Agunis, the Everyman Gamer, and it's really weird to say that after James.
All right, everyone. So, third-party publishing for Starfinder. You all know more about this than just about anybody else operating in the space. You or if the sales charts on DriveThruRPG tell us so, which is probably the biggest place to go to get PDFs out there, though I guess you could also buy PDFs at Puzzle.com, even though that's harder to find right now, and at the Open Gaming Store. Is there any other place I'm missing that is a frequent shop?
You can also buy them on Amazon.com, and you can buy them, of course, on MakeYourGameLegendary.com.
I just use those three. You can only find me there. Exclusivity.
I did forget. Yeah, you all occasionally do make... I always think of third party as like the PDF store, but you all actually, at conventions especially, get to see only these very nice printed books full of gorgeous artwork. And the game for... Oh, yeah, you're holding up the Alien Bastard, which we will talk about. We will talk about the Alien Bastard, do not worry. But it seems like especially the last few years of Pathfinder leading into Starfinder, the game has sort of been raised for the quality of product that a third party has to bring to the field to be noticed. Is that an observation both of you all have had?
I would say that you sometimes see stuff that is not, like, the highest quality ever, but I think that publishers who don't bring that quality quickly find themselves like not really all that relevant. A lot of us have worked really hard to try to improve the community image of third-party publishing's quality. We came from an era in the game's history, specifically parts of 3.0 and 3.5, where third-party products were notorious for being low quality, and a lot of us Starfinder and Pathfinder people have kind of worked our butts off to change people's minds about that. Would you agree with that, Jason?
Well, I certainly would. And, you know, at Legendary Games, that was something that we really kind of decided to go quite intentionally when we put the company together back in 2011, which was, you know, like, there are lots of ways you can go as a publisher, and from, you know, high gloss, high art to kind of, you know, low, very basic. And we said, look, we're going to put together not just the best, you know, writers and contributors, but we want to make the, you know, products that are beautiful, that are exciting, that are fun, that are, you know, a joy to experience in all the ways that you can. And that's the way we're going to do it. And we actually, when we started making products, we priced them a little higher than a lot of other people's stuff. And we said, but we think we're going to create a premium product, and we're going to, you know, bring the best people to it. And we think you'll agree. So you try it out, and we'll either fly or we'll die. But we'll fly or die making the very best and highest quality product that we can, because that's the only way that really I want to do business, you know?
Fly or die, you're still a phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, our listeners might not know you all specifically. They probably know Alex because, you know, he's on every other show.
I hope so.
But for Jason specifically, why don't you begin by introducing us to yourself, some of your background in the industry and as a player, and then talk about Legendary Games and what a Starfinder fan, an overview of what a Starfinder fan would be interested in your products.
Sure. Well, I, you know, started playing D&D, AD&D back when I was 10 years old, back in 1981. And, you know, within the first few months, I very much gravitated towards the DMing side. And I always like creating stuff for the game, creating adventures, creating magic maps and monsters and so on and so forth. And I would make the whole notebooks and stuff. And so I sent a few things off to Dragon and Dungeon. It didn't come to much of anything. But eventually I did get a few things published in those magazines. And then I for Wizards of the Coast on their website doing columns for about 5 years in the mid-2000s. And then was unceremoniously booted from my column for reasons that were not explained, but eventually became that they were, you know, pulling everything in for 4th edition. And at that point, it's like, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do. But then that was when Paizo was ramping up their RPG Superstar contest. So I said, heck, I'll enter that. Why not? And got into that and made it all the way to the finals of the event. And since then, I'm pretty sure I've written more things for Paizo than any other, you know, at least on the Pathfinder side, than any other freelancer out there. 70 some odd credits. But in that first, the first RPG Superstar contest, one of the judges that year was Clark Peterson, who was the founder of Necromancer Games, one of the early third-party publishers for D&D, and he was interested in working together on some projects after that, and it took a few years to kind of come together, but eventually in 2011, we, in addition to my own personal freelancing, we came together. It was me and Clark, Clinton Boomer, Neil Spicer, Greg Vaughn, and we kind of broadened out from there, making add-on product that would go with Pathfinder. We started off working on things that would go with Pathfinder Adventure Pass for the Carrying Crown, for Jade Regent, for Kingmaker, so on down the road, and eventually started broadening out to expansions on rule systems, and from there, making our own content and creating our own new things for, you know, beginner adventures like the Trail of the Apprentice, and then the we really dabbled into sci-fi for the first time. We did stuff for the Iron Gods AP, but also created our own adventure path, the Legendary Planet, which I'm still slogging through the very last chapter of, me and Steve Helter working together to bring that one home. And we created it first for Pathfinder and for 5th edition D&D, but then also once Starfinder was announced, and well, shoot, we may as well create it for Starfinder as well. And so we have broadened out with a whole line of products for Starfinder. Some of them are ones that, you know, are adventures or supplements that also have their equivalents in, you know, Pathfinder. We've created books of, you know, new equipment, new gear, new planets that you can visit, and of course adventures as well, and new things on races and class expansions like the Solarian for the Envoy. And we've got a couple of dozen Starfinder products out there already, and they've been very well received so far. And the most recent ones have been, you know, to reach back to some of our roots, some of our best-selling, you know, products, you know, of all time, really, have been ones that have worked on expanding the idea of, you know, kingdom building, mass combat, and really broadening out those sort of ultimate campaign and ultimate intrigues types of rules for Pathfinder and for 5th edition. But we've also started producing a compatible set of those products to expand that side of the Starfinder game. So you're not just flying around in your spaceship, you know, going on personal adventures and, you know, racking up, you know, kills and winning fame and notoriety, but you're actually getting out there and becoming a factor in the campaign universe. Star Empires debuted a few months ago and has been doing very well for us at, you know, DriveThruRPG and everywhere else you've mentioned, which really brings up the idea of founding a colony, expanding that colony out into an interplanetary empire, working your way into how you want to engage in military actions across the can span planets or span entire system. We'll be expanding the military side in an upcoming product coming in about sometime in February called Star Battles. But before that, there's another coming out called Star Intrigue, which really deals with the political side, with factions and power groups, power brokers, but really expanding that side of the social side of your sci-fi game. So it's not just about exploring and, you know, adventuring in the traditional sense, but really becoming a person of stature in the world, becoming someone famous or infamous, and, you know, working to build up yourself in a way that will, you know, make your name resound across the universe. So, okay. But that's kind of a brief rundown of kind of where I came from, how LG kind of grew up and grew out, and we've broadened out our kind of reach and our expanse of what we're working on for 5e and for Pathfinder and for, of course, right here, Starfinder.
Yeah. Yeah, No Direction has recommended your company and your products in the past before, especially your support material for the adventure paths. That's always been exceptionally handy to have around. Now, Alex, I know a lot of our listeners are familiar, but it's been a while since we've heard your backstory. So why don't you give us how you got involved in the industry, in gaming, and then how Everyman Gaming came along?
Wow, how I got involved in the industry. Okay, so when I was in college, a bunch of my friends and I bonded over a shared like of the Pact Magic rules for 3.5. I'm going to skip my whole how I got into gaming. I have articles on that in other places. So we got into this, like, it's Pact Magic was like this system for 3.5 where you summoned vestiges and they bound to your body and they caused you to change and gave you supernatural powers. And we all thought it was super cool. And so then what ended up happening was when I got out of college, one emailed, hey, look at this third-party product. This guy did a third-party version of this system. You know, maybe you could convert it to Pathfinder. And, like, at the time, I was not in the industry. I was like, oh, I don't know about this. So I emailed the guy who wrote it. His name was Dario Nardi. And I said to him, Dario, I saw your stuff. I think you should convert your material to Pathfinder. Here, I wrote some ideas for you to try to get you get your brains moving on a head step. This is what it could look like if you did it. And then he said, oh, really? Could you show me what this could look like? And then that happened several dozen times. And then about 9 months later, I had written an entire book. that is essentially how Pack Magic Unbound Volume 1 came into existence. So I did a lot of work with Dario for a while, and I did some work with Craigerton Broadhurst in Raging Swan, where I wrote a lot of like villages and stuff. It's funny because everybody knows me as like a mechanics guy, but like nobody realizes that I got my start writing villages for Raging Swan. So eventually what happened was some of my friends knew that I had been writing stuff. Outside of my close friends, it was like a dead secret. I would not tell anybody about my... And then what happened was, is my friend was like, oh, you know, in our home campaign, he was playing a tanky character. I want to take all the punches. And he was like, but I just don't like how this one antagonized feat can only be used once. Can you write me a new system that'll work better? And I said, sure. And so I wrote the system, and he ended up using it in our campaign where I was playing. And I was like, here, your character should use this. And my character in that campaign was Kirshen Yolenzo, a Kitsune Cavalier. And then I was like, oh, this rule set's pretty good. Do you mind if I publish it? Nah, but how are you going to publish it? You don't have a company. And I actually pitched those rules that would become psychological combat to several different companies, and all of them told me they didn't want to take a risk on it.
What?
And yeah, yeah. Well, it was... Yeah, and none of them did. And I was like, well, I got really discouraged after the first two. And then I was like, well, you know, if nobody will buy this, then maybe I'll just publish it myself and see what happens. So that same buddy who encouraged me to write it, his dad is a lawyer. So I got him to help me make Everyman Gaming. And it was named after my blog. Everyman Gaming was my personal blog that I actually used to join the network. But I always kept the name in the back because for various different reasons, we didn't want to use that name for my blog name here on the site. So it was just like, all right, let's just store this and see what happens. And eventually it turned into my company. And I'd say I really didn't get all that big until I put out the Kitsune Compendium, though. That was kind of the big one. And that was the one where, like, people are like, oh, Alex, you're so eccentric, you know, you have all of these Fox people all over your products. But like, what nobody realizes is like they people threw money at me for that one. Like that was my first like really good seller, and it was a best-selling product for like months. Like there'd be like slow months where nothing really big came out from any other publishers, and then you would just see that just randomly pop up on the top 10 list for like a weekend, and I'd be like, what are you doing here? You're 6 months old. But you know, like you give people money, and man, they're going to keep trying to get that money. Am I right, Jason?
That's right.
So that's kind of where Everyman Gaming. So now we did our first or second, maybe second year of a product a week last month. We're still going. Right now we're doing a lot of Starfinder stuff in anticipation for a second edition coming out, and things are pretty cool. I'm enjoying a lot of it. We have I don't know how exactly I got so big in Starfinder. I imagine it's because of my work on the Starfarer's Companion, which was actually a Rogue Genius Games product, but I kept supporting it, and people knew my name from it, and they're like, oh man, this guy worked on this thing I love, let me give him more money for these more things. That's just kind of what happens.
And in a lot of ways, your approach to the products you release is a little bit different from Jason's, where Jason, you produce a lot of really good, thick, hardcover, big old thick books full of art, like at a slower pace than one a week. And then Alex, you produce small, like 10-page PDFs every week.
I'm not going to lie, I stole that from Legendary Games. When they started, they were doing their Mythic minis, and I was like, that's smart, but let me not do Mythic. Let me just do stuff. That's where I'm sorry, Jason, if you're ever wondering if I stole your formula, I did.
I stole it from Owen with his bullet points. So
that's true.
All stealing going around. And we, like I said, we used to do, you know, a product week plus other stuff. In 2016, we put out 153 products. Which is frankly far too many. That's the, you know, every two and a half days, we had a new product coming out. So I've ramped it down a little since then. And some of that's because we've had other giant projects.
I remember some of your old posts because I was tagged in a couple of them where you'd be like, here's six new products. Look at all these pictures. Look at all these names. And I'd be like, oh, no, I'm buried in notifications.
Go, 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 go. Yeah. But, you know, if any of you out there who are, you know, trying to break into third-party publishing, if I may segue here, this is one of the things that really helps. It is infinitely better for you if you are trying to establish something to put out, you know, 500 words once a week for 10 weeks, then 5,000 words once every 10 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, or you know, however the math works out, you want to be visible. You want to have something to show. You want to have something to promote. You want to have something to keep your eyes visible. People say, oh, yeah, I've heard of you now. Because you keep putting yourself in front of people. You keep putting your name in front of people, your logo in front of people. And even if they miss the first 10 products, maybe by the time number 11 rolls around, when you keep that wheel turning, then they see you. So definitely as you're working up, don't try to start with, oh, I have this great campaign setting I want to work on. It's going to take you 10 years to do. Start small and work and put stuff out. You got to do the work. You got to turn the crank. And that's the best way to move yourself forward and start building that on-ramp.
Absolutely. Param, have I ever told you the Amanda story that I have?
I'm going to pretend like no.
Okay. I'm going to tell you the Amanda story that I have. At my very first PaizoCon, it was the year that Amanda Hammond-Coons, Linda Zayas-Palmer, and Crystal Fraser got hired for their various line. And so I went up and I introduced myself to as many of them as I could because I was like, oh, these people need to know who I am. I'm a freelancer. Got to get work. And so I went up to Amanda, not thinking about how like my company at that point, I think was like a year old, maybe a couple months. I don't remember. And I went up to Amanda and I introduced myself to her. And she said, oh, I've heard of you. You're the guy who owned about Kitsune, right? And I was like... it's like that week we had I had a product that came out that had a Kitsune on the cover, but the product was about a new way to do favored class bonuses. Like it had nothing to do with Kitsune aside from a fox dude being on the cover. And I was like, I guess that's kind of true. Like I sat there and I was like, I could explain to you why you're wrong. But if I do, like, I want you to hire me. So let me not. And let me just try to eject from this as quickly as possible. But so that was my very first interaction with Amanda, and it always stuck with me because like when you do stuff regularly and people know who you are, and especially if you have a trade dress, like Legendary Games having this really big epic looking trade dress, they use a lot of gold, am I right, Jason?
That's and true.
That's very much like their style. They big bold glowing letters, like you know a Legendary Games product when you see it, and that's kind of one of the tricks you gotta get into. You have to have a look and people need to be able to see your look and go, oh, this is this person, I can trust this just by looking at it and seeing it's familiar.
Mm-hmm. It really anything that you can kind of have something to hang your hat on. And so look, even in Alex's case, even if Kitsune was the only thing he was known for, then fine, be the Kitsune guy.
Right. Because you got it.
Somebody will need something Kitsune and they'll want to come talk to you. And Jolly is somebody that I came to talk to because I had seen his work on Kineticist.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, yeah.
I wasn't really that into Kineticist myself personally. I actually like the other occult classes better. But he had an interesting eye for it, so I started talking to him about creating some Kineticist content for Legendary Games. And it's kind of funny. He's told the story sometimes. He emailed me one time, kind of out of the blue. I said, I'm hiking with my son. I'll get back to you later. Because I was on this like 4-day wilderness outing with my son as part of his high school graduation requirements. And at first he thought, is that him just blowing me off or something? What does that mean? I'm hiking? And he didn't expect to hear back from me. He was like, no, I actually was hiking. I was out in the wilderness. I didn't have any Wi-Fi. So I got back and said, here's what I want to do. Here's how we want to do it. What are your ideas? And since then, he's brought out to do lots of other different things. But that was his point of contact. That was his point of entry. So, you know, if especially, again, as you're trying to build your brand, you want to build a look, you want to be able to be known for something. Because once you've kind of built one, you know, leg of the stool, then you can start the other things to come around it. So you can't build, you know, Rome in a day. You got to keep working your way up to it. But it helps a lot, again, to have something people say, this is the thing that I'm good at. And then I'll add another thing to that. And then I'll add another thing to that. And so find what resonates with you. Find what you're good at. All writers are definitely not equally good at all things. And myself included, and everyone included. Some people may be very good at a lot of things. Some people may be great at one thing and not so hot at something else. So it all depends on finding your strength, finding your interest, and finding the stuff that you're excited and passionate to create. Because you'll find a lot more success there working on stuff that you enjoy instead of just trying to grind to cover every possible base.
It's very easy to see passion in writing. It's very easy. And fans usually resonate. Like, if they can tell that you care, then they're like, yeah, let's keep going and do the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, both of you have got a lot of experience publishing in Pathfinder. And Jason, you've got a lot of 5th edition experience now. How is the space for developing content for Starfinder, especially third-party content, differ from, say, producing Pathfinder or 5th edition?
I think that some of it is it's a relatively young game system, and it's familiar enough because it's similar enough to Pathfinder that people kind of have echoes of what they wanted before, but it's different enough that it's actually not the same. And more to the point, this is something that I heard long ago, which is that customers don't necessarily know what they want ahead of time. And you may think that they do, and they may think that they do, but it's sometimes it's hard to kind of jump ahead and anticipate the market. Let's take an example of the Starfarer's Companion that, you know, that Owen put together, you know, which, you know, launched right at the time Starfinder did. Back then, there were a lot of discussion threads and a lot of things on sort of the third-party space, on the Paizo boards, on Facebook, and wherever else, where people talk about what kind of third-party content do you want to see for Starfinder? And the sort of fairly resounding chorus at that time was, we don't want to see new class material. We want to try out and test drive the new classes. We're not trying to just play Pathfinder in space. If we want to do that, we play Pathfinder in space. We want, you know, adventures. We want, you know, new worlds to explore. We want other stuff here. And then the Starfarer's Companion drops, and what does it do? Whoosh, it skyrockets. So the very thing that people said, I don't think we want that, turns out they did.
Yes.
And so sometimes you got to take a guess, make an educated guess, and also you got to think about what are the things that I think I would like to see in this game. Sometimes you can make personal passion projects. You want to make sure that you think it's something that'll sell. If you just want to make something because you just want to make it, hey, God bless you, you do it, that's fine. But you also need to make your best educated guess to what will sell. And sometimes you'll guess right, sometimes you'll guess wrong. And so learning the Starfinder appetite has been interesting, and also learning where people buy different things. There are some products that we make that sell well on one store and don't sell well on another store. Mm-hmm. And it's sometimes it's kind of random, but sometimes you can start to see patterns emerging. And so you want to find out what are the places where I can put my product in a way that it will hit the customer base and, you know, find that resonance and pull them out and make them want to buy it.
I'm so glad people wanted the Starfarer's Companion. That was the most stressful 3 months of my life. Matt and I put that whole thing together in, like, because we got our original, like, for all the third-party publishers had an opportunity where they could essentially sign up to get an advanced copy of the rule set for making compatible products for day one launches. And we got ours in, like, April. And we had to have this book ready when Starfinder launched at the start of August. So, like, oh my gosh, it was to date, it is one of the hardest jobs I've ever done as a writer. And like, you can ask anybody who was on the team for that book, we all agree. Jacob had to work his butt off. LJ, Owen, Matt, all of us were nuts. Like, it was, oof.
LJ was doing layout revisions, like, you know, the night before.
Yeah. Yeah, she was. And so, like, a lot of people, like, see that book and they're like, oh, it's from Owen's company. Owen wrote it. And Owen had a very, very strong, like, I'm not writing this book. I am the Starfinder, you know, developer person. This is not professional for me to write this. But, you know, it was for his company, and Matt and I did all the writing. But Owen was like, all right, I'll give you a development, and that's about it. You know, so I was like, all right, we're going to sink or swim on our own merits. And that, even that was going, like, so, like, that needed to be done, but so for LJ to do the layout about two days before. So Owen was doing like hundreds of pages of development like 4 days before it was due, and that's Owen going to Gen Con for his game's launch. Doing this development, it was insane. If you're listening and you want to be a third party publisher, don't do that. Don't please learn from my pain. I mean, it might look appetizing to be like, oh man, I'm gonna have one popular third-party products for this game system ever. Don't do it like that. Please. Please. Yep. I'm not doing it for me. I'm telling you this for you.
Yeah.
I'm sure you have stories about Crazy Crunch, Jason.
Yeah. What's your most harrowing story?
Oh, my most harrowing story is actually more about logistics than it is about writing. And that was just that this was maybe a couple of Gen Cons ago when I got 6 pallets of books, which were delayed in shipping, and they arrived the day before I left for Gen Con. And so within the space of less than 24 hours, I had to go receive them, get them all packed to a storage area, arrange for people to who were picking them up. And oh, by the way, as I was doing this, the storage area turned out to be not quite as big as we thought it was. So it was a complete hot mess. Me and my son trying to move, hundreds upon hundreds of boxes. It was over 3 tons of books. And in the first hour, I sprained my ankle, trying to run these books around with these pallets. So the entire Gen Con, I'm walking around on a sprained ankle, but I had to get these books there to be in time. And just dealing with all of that, just 30 car pile of everything together. I had a similar kind of thing happen today, as I said, with the Alien Bestiary, with the Pirate Campaign Committee for 5e, with the Fates of Madness card game. But it's in the middle of January, when I have all the time I need. Weather turned out to be nice. I had people to help me. Makes all the difference in the world. But when the pressure is on and the time is very limited, I had to have my mom come over with my son to meet another trucking company and with a bill of lading at the storage area to get them. It was crazy. Crunching breath.
I remember this Gen Con. Your eye bags had bags.
Yes, they did.
Now, weren't there also like some hilarious damaged books you shared some pictures of during that?
Oh, yeah. So, some of the books got damaged there. Some of the books. There was also an additional harrowing year of insanity dealing with Amazon and shipping. And that's its own separate thing. Just Alex, you're not selling on Amazon, I heard. And there are good things to do with Amazon. But there are some things where it just will make you lose your damn mind. And it's a perfectly oiled system that works wonderfully well as long as nothing is even 2 microns off of expected.
So you're telling me that
if you've got the slightest little burr on anything, it is just a complete...
So this is a situation where a grain of sand can destroy the whole machine.
I think I've lost Jason's audio.
Oh, I thought that you were pausing and not saying to give the impression that you were swearing. I thought that it was a joke. I'm sorry.
That would work too, but...
Yeah. It was good timing.
Yeah,
it was
really good timing. Worked out.
Unfortunately, it'll get edited out in post-production.
No. No, it's really, the work is the work. And, for anybody who's looked to get into it, yes, it is work. Yeah, it's a hobby, but it's work. And it's a lot of work. And sometimes it's easy and it's fun, and sometimes it's a grind. And there's a certain relentlessness, and especially if you're going the route of doing, high volume or high frequency production like, Alex is doing now. There's a lot of just churn that happens. The reason why I stopped doing the weekly stuff was that it was taking up too much of my time that needed to go to other things. And so I said, you know what? At a certain point, we've built up enough. We don't need, the value add of the churn. And it was becoming more of a value minus. And so we sort of moved away from that and moved in some other directions in order to get, bigger things done that we need to get done. And Legendary Games, we don't necessarily have a fixed production schedule. Stuff kind of gets done when it gets done. And so it's something we will give an estimate of when we think it'll be out. But if some other book is done before it, then we just shift the schedule around. And hey, guess what? Arcforge Star Path's coming out this week instead, because that's what's done. And that certainly gives me less heartburn to not feel like, oh, no, I missed the deadline for this, because I'm able to be flexible. But you've got to kind of work out to that point where you have enough stuff that's always in the pipe that the specific order of it doesn't end up mattering as much. And so, I don't know. That may have wandered far afield from your original question.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of your recent projects, some of your newer stuff. Mm-hmm. Let's start with Alex this time. You've been putting together Pop Culture Catalog as a project.
I have.
Why? And why has it seemed to have been going over so well?
Okay, so the Pop Culture Catalog is a series of Starfinder products that I'm putting out that kind of takes some of the more mundane aspects of world building and gives GMs these like fully fleshed out little snippets that you can use wherever you want. So the first one is vid games. So the product goes and we intentionally make some vid game publishers, and I think most publishers have like three or four vid games. And the idea is that like if you look at the games and the general history of the publishers, you could kind of figure out which company, real world company, we're parodying, but they're designed to be different enough that like it doesn't feel like it's something that, not that you couldn't do it on your own, but that it was worth the purchase price for the work that we put into it, if that makes sense. Because the one thing that I really didn't want to do was to just copy real world stuff, because anybody can do that. If you're buying one of my products, I want to make sure that this feels like that this was work that was, would have been annoying for you to do, or work that you appreciate having done for you. So that's kind of like the idea for those. To just have these little world building components. And it's also kind of sneaky because we're also in behind the scenes in Rogue Genius Games, we're working on the Blood Space campaign setting guide. And I've been putting stuff, I'm the primary developer for it. So I've been putting in like little snippets of stuff that we've come up with and be like, here, look at these ideas. They're coming. They're going to be here soon. So like we've done stuff like vid games. We did, clothing was fun. Clothing was the one nobody expected us to do, but like clothing is so important in our everyday lives. Everybody has their brands they like, and it's helpful to say like, oh, here are these brands, and also here's some little world stories about why they exist the way they do in the Blood Space campaign setting. You know, you can use that and tweak the names around for your setting if you want, or you could just drop it and just use the general gist of it. You can do what you want with it, and that's kind of how it's laid out. Our newest one in that line is cruises and resorts, which was a lot of fun to do. It's basically a whole bunch of fantasy destination all-inclusive places and like cruise lines. And one of the things I do for Blood Space is that Starfinder feels very realistic with magic kind of being a back burner thing. So I tend to just go for the full-blown fantasy magic side of science fantasy for this product line. So like one of the resorts is like they are a company that does anti-aging supplements, which is one of the reasons why people can live so long in our version of the Starfinder campaign. So if you want, you can go to this resort that this company has, and you could spend the entire weekend as a kid, and that's one of the sample all-inclusive resorts. There's another one where you can take a ferry and just tour the shattered remains of a planet. And over here, you see this planet that completely blew up, and it was a travesty, but here, give us money to see it. And like that cruise ship is like, it was a former war vessel, like Armada, that patrols the area to keep it safe. And they're like, you can cruise in our fancy Ultronaut if you want, just give us money to fund our military. that's the kind of, and that's the thing, like you're supposed to read it and go, this makes sense, but like this is fun. It's the complete opposite of the other new product line we're doing, which is the Occult Skill Guide, which you could currently describe as the most nightmare of nightmares.
Yeah, I mean the body horror art you keep sharing of that just creeps me out.
Nobody, you're the only one who's seen it.
Oh, okay. I look forward to creeping you all out.
It was supposed to come out tomorrow, but I'm probably going to have to push it back. Today was a lot more hectic than I was expecting, but we're doing. I wrote my own completely new rules for corruptions, where they're an affliction instead of their own thing. And this one is classic corruption. So classic corruptions means like this is stuff from media you've seen before. So we've got two that are like obvious. We got therianthropy, which is lycanthropy, but for all animals. And we have vampirism, which are like, okay, those are the two that you expect. Werewolves and vampires, got it. But the other three, one of them is decouplement, which is where your cellular structure and all your cells, they just stop working and you turn into Clayface. Nice. You are a giant blob of grotesque flesh, and the art for that one is horrific. It's great. We have all of our iconic crew suffering these corruptions, and that picture is just like, ugh! There's another one that is called Gene Warp. It's it is thematically inspired by Jeff Goldblum's The Fly. So if you want to have your DNA horrifically altered terrifying monster, Gene Warp is probably for you. Mm-hmm. And then the last one in that book is called Psychomutative. And if you are a fan of the extremely influential 1986 anime movie Akira, you probably know where this is going.
Yep.
Tetsuo!
That art just came in today, and seeing our iconic Technomancer with the giant pulsing head and the horrific organically mechanical arms, it's like, oh,
man, like, I'm gonna make this thing. I'm gonna have
oh, it's so me. Great. So, oh, it's so great.
Now, Jason, every time I meet you at conventions or we talk, one of the things you're very quickly to shove at me and brag about is your Alien Bestiary products, and it's coming to Starfinder. So tell us about the Alien Bestiary.
He's like, I have a copy.
In yes. fact, I have 1,000 of them. And they'll be going out to our Kickstarter backers soon. The Alien Bestiary project, it's actually a 3-book project, even though I said, shoot me if I ever try a 3-book project. So actually, it was really a 9-book project. It was 3 books for Pathfinder, 5e, and Starfinder.
So, your reaction to that is amazing, James, by the way. All of you listeners who are just listening as a podcast, his face is like aged with the weight of 12,000 years.
So, the Alien Bestiary, it's the Starfinder version, is a 448-page monster book. So it's triple the size of the
okay.
each one of the Pathfinder or system. I got systems on the brain of the Starfinder monster books, the Alien Archives. And each one of this book, you've got, I think it's over 300 monsters. A lot of them are updated Pathfinder, creatures that have been, recreated for Starfinder, but there's also, I think, over 100 completely brand new monsters that are drawn from the Aetherov campaign setting from Legendary Planet, and some that are brand new to this book, never been seen anywhere else before. There's also appendices, which are built in to, add additional rules, additional expanded rules for vacuum, for gravity, for zero-g, for integrating monsters with the Aetherov campaign setting. And the whole project is really just trying to expand radically the options for GMs who want to, either reach back into sort of the deep well of Pathfinder War for space and sci-fi appropriate creatures and horror-themed creatures, but also who want to be able to expand out into, entirely new directions. And it's a huge, thick and lovely book. And Param has some of the artwork. Here's one of our lovely chitons from the Aethera setting. And they're... If you have space manticores, you've got giant mantis shrimp as well, because you never know, you'll meet them on an aquatic planet. but it's really what it says on the tin. It's an enormous monster book. It's beautiful full color artwork. The artwork's amazing. Pyramids can share some of that on the site, however you do your technological magic and wizardry.
Technomancy. Yes. Where this is the Starfinder podcast.
Yes, the technomancy and your mysticism. but as I said, it's actually part of a 3-book series. The Alien Bestiary is out now. The Alien Codex is I think it has 50 different races and species. About over half, I think almost 2/3 of them are with full playable race info. We have been working on this project for a while. We brought in Liz Waddell and Landon Winkler as our, key developers. She worked on, editing and developing a lot of the Starfinder core rulebook and the Alien Archives as well. But we've had a cast of thousands involved in bringing this stuff up for Starfinder. And this book's available, as soon as they send them out to Kickstarter backers. You can get a PDF now. You can pre-order the hardback. The Alien Codex will be out sometime, probably in the next month or two. There also is the Aethera Field Guide. So if anybody who picked up the Aethera campaign setting, and an awful lot of you did, it was spearheaded by Robert Brooks and his team, and it came out there, Kickstarter ran shortly before Starfinder was announced, and it has some similarities to it in the way the Starfinder and Starship combat works. There's someone also worked on it. Tons of people. And it is a very rich and elaborate campaign setting wherein the central conceit is that it's sealed off from the rest of space. And so all of these spirits of the dead cannot escape, nor can the powers of the gods get in. And so you've got a very strange nexus of, space that is chock-block full of ghosts and spirits of the damned. You've got, formerly demon-worshipping space minotaurs who now are cut off from the demonic gods and have gone cannibalistic and rogue and eaten all of their priests, but are still predatory, you know, space monsters and are out there racking the world with the various worlds of the Aethera system with their space fleets. And a lot of that flavor comes through the Aethera Field Guide, which is a supplement here that we are producing it for all three systems, including Starfinder, takes a deep dive look in the ecologies of each of those planets. And so if you're familiar with those kind of ecology of the articles in the old days of Dragon Magazine, or even just thinking in kind of Pathfinder, Starfinder, it's a more deep dive monster write-up that you would get in an Adventure Path volume rather than in a bestiary, or like the way that they've done them in the Alien Archive, where you're not just getting, hey, here's some stats, but you also are getting a lot of, what is this creature? How does it interact with the world? And how does it, you know, participate in that ecosystem? So that will be coming out this spring as well. The Pathfinder version is almost done. WizCourts is just about done with the final layout on it, and the Starfinder version is getting compiled now, so it'll be ready to come out sometime whenever layout gets done. So I'd hazard a guess say March. But it's exciting to be able to bring such, you know, big products to the Starfinder milieu, and the response to the PDF version of the Alien Bestiary has been very good so far, and we hope people are excited to see the book because it's heavy and beautiful and wonderful, and you can, you know, inflict a serious bludgeoning damage with it.
Yeah, that Alien Bestiary looks like you could definitely give an unruly player a concussion.
They probably had it coming.
Yeah, I remember like when you all were first putting Aetheria together, I got to talk with you and I got to talk with Robert Brooks beforehand, and the sales pitch for that just was like, I was like, oh, this is neat. And then just hearing some of the details, I was like, no, this is something amazing and special and needs a lot of attention, and we can't wait to get
its own unique flavor. It's not, you know, it isn't just another space thing. It has its own shtick. It's got its own feel to it. It's got its own design aesthetic. It's got, you know, the eternal, and the reason there's so many chitons in there is they're part of the evil counterpoint of song, the chords, which, you know, suffuse reality. And those who can work with this brand of character class called the Cantor, that, you know, in some ways replaces kind of, you know, bards and clerics. And, you know, if there's a healing class in the Aethera setting, it would be that. But it really plays and leans into its particular strengths and its, and the flavor that it has. And it's got a little bit of a diesel punk meets cosmic horror vibe to it as well, but it's got kind of that, you know, noir detective kind of flavor as well. So it's a bit of a genre mashup, but it's one that's really, you know, it's innovative, it's interesting and different. Legendary Planet, which we've done, has its own shtick as well, but goes in a different direction, which is much more lying on the magic side. It's much more John Carter of Mars meets Thundar the Barbarian in the Mos Eisley Cantina. It's kind of the grungy outer rim, you know, it's a little bit low tech. The alien technology exists, but some planets are more technological than others, and it's much more, yeah, like I said, the sort of the crusty outer rim of the Star Wars universe, and as opposed to the high flying, you know, Star Trek transporter beams and, you know, glossy ultra high tech, but where, you know, magic still has a bigger role to play, and where most of the interplanetary transportation is by portal gateways that were designed by ancient, you know, greater civilizations rather than by starships. It's something which, very interestingly, could fit very nicely during the gap, or even before the gap of the Starfinder universe, or on the edge of the universe where FTL travel has not yet reached. So space is big, and space is, and sci-fi is big as a genre. That's one of the things that's cool about Blood Space that, you know, I'm talking about. And Legendary Planet and Aetheria and Core Starfinder is that there's so much room in space for all these different things to coexist. And all you have to do to connect them is just take one more step along the warp drive or through the drift or through a Stargate or however you get there. And you may find yourself in an entirely different style of quadrant of adventure, an entirely different theme and feel of what Starfinder is going to be. There is not just one way to play the game, and there's not just one, you know, tenor and flow for how sci-fi should be represented in a Starfinder game. And I think it really speaks to the flexibility and fluidity of the system and the ability to really represent different styles of sci-fi.
Now, James, you are a player and an expert in Starfinder. You GM, you play, you do the society. What do you look for, or what would you like to see out there for third-party publishers that is either out there now or is not out there and you'd really like to see more of?
If there's anything I would personally like to see, it would be an expansion of power armor rules into larger vehicles, kind of like as a... Because the whole mecha simulation is a really good idea. The best version I've seen of it is actually it's a third party class. I forget who made it. They wear golems in Pathfinder. I've actually bought a couple ones that are mech focused in Starfinder and haven't actually found them very good. I also don't get to play a lot of non-society Starfinder, so third party stuff's kind of on my back burner. But as far as player options, I love that fantasy of just being a jet pilot / robot pilot.
We definitely have that. We've been building up a whole product line for Pathfinder called ArcForge. We have had technology expanded, the ArcForge Cybertech and ArcForge Starpath is coming out soon. And the Helmsman class we created for on the Pathfinder side is specifically designed to integrate with piloting, either in vehicles or in mechs. And redoing the that class on the Starfinder side is on the agenda for later on this year. The Starpath product really will help with that as well, because that is actually a dual system product. It's actually designed for both Pathfinder and Starfinder to really facilitate forwards and backwards conversion of things from Pathfinder to Starfinder and from Starfinder to Pathfinder. So to take things from one system to the other and really make them not just convert, but mesh in a lot richer of a kind of a way. And that would help if you are interested in checking out, but when you can't wait for the eventual Starfinder conversion of the Helmsman class and technology expanded, but to be able to look at the first ArcForge book there.
Yeah, I actually have a technology expanded on my Drive for RPG wish list. I'll get it next payday. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now we're coming up on time, but before we go off, as awesome as our two guests are here, there are other third-party publishers out there, and a couple I would like to call attention to. One is Zero Hour. They produce some really great maps, and very specifically they also do a whole lot of starships that they render in 3D and then provide the whole deck plans for it and the stats for the starships, which if you've ever designed starships in Starfinder, you know that that's a very time intensive process. And so I really appreciate that company being out there for me being able to just go, I need lots of starship for games, and just being able to just have a whole bunch of ships and ship maps available instantly. They also do a lot of sci-fi maps too, which are also very good. And then one that you might not think of is Silver Games has expanded into Starfinder as well. You might know Silver Games as David Silver's company that has produced the Pony Finder game, and which started off as a campaign setting for Pathfinder to emulate the sort of My Little Pony fandom. And they also have brought their furry material with Hybrid Blood. They've converted that over to Starfinder as well. So if you've been a fan of their work, it is extremely high quality product. It has its own very dedicated fan base, extremely dedicated from the mail we get, and there's a lot of passion put into that. So if any of that interests you and you've been a fan of that, you'll also find that available for Starfinder, the third party front. Any other shout outs to companies, gang? Alrighty.
Well, a lot of people like to assume that Owen and I are a single entity that is that's like two-faced, the way that Quirrell is on the front and then Voldemort is on the back. Wow. I don't have an Owen on
the front. You don't?
No, I don't. But Owen puts out things for Starfinder infrequently when he has time, and when he does, they're usually things that you can see Owen's mad genius in them, is the best way to say it. There's a reason he's called Rogue Genius Games. One of my favorites that he did not too long ago is a product called Toonamancy, where the entire product is about slapstick spells that are themed after like 60s and 50s cartoons. So like one of the spells makes like an anvil fall from the sky and crash into your target, and another one of them, like it's kind of like a Roadrunner or a Wile E. Coyote face, where he like reaches behind his back and pulls out something. Like, where did you get that? You're not wearing clothing. Like, there's a spell that lets you do that. It's just, it's really funny. And I wish that Owen had more time to put out weird stuff like that, because anybody who follows know that I like weird stuff. Weird is the greatest flavor of the
Now, before we call this done, Jason, is there anything you want to shout out to that you're working on, and where can people get in contact with you and follow your work?
All right. Well, the best place to check us out is on our website at makeyourgamelegendary.com. You can also follow us at Legendary Games on Facebook, at Legendary Games J on Twitter, Legendary Games on Google Plus for however long it survives. We also, post up on the RPG Net and EN World and the Paizo message boards as we have time. But following our website is the best place to get updates and as I said, the Alien Bastion here, I'll be shipping out a metric crap ton of those to Kickstarter backers over the next week. And once all the backers have their books on their way to them, then we will be putting the hardcover book there for sale, the Alien Codex. And if they're a field guide for Starfinder, those should be available probably February to March. This, as a Star Empires, is already out for Starfinder. So if you want to found your own colonies, build your own empire across space, that's a great foundation product out right now. And Star Battles will be coming next month. And as I said, an Arc Forge Star Asterisk Path is coming out this Friday. And it is a crossover product that really helps facilitate and enable your ability to cross over your Starfinder, your Pathfinder games, material you already have. But also, if you're interested in the Arc Forge product line, Technology Expanded and Cybertech, which both really pull in a lot from the Ultimate Psionics, from Past War, from the Akashic Mysteries, a lot of alternate rule systems, and blend them together with traditional Pathfinder classes and in a sci-fi context. And there's hundreds of new, there's abundant mecha rules, there are robotic companion rules, there's all kinds of psionic powers, tons of new classes and archetypes, and that's an expanding product line we have going on. We have another, an expanded Arc Forge campaign settings coming out later on, and Legendary Planet, it continues to come along for, I think, the first four adventures are out for Starfinder now, and the fifth one will be out probably sometime, I'm guessing, around March. And eventually it will be all compiled into a massive, kiloton-sized, adventure path that you can, knock two people unconscious at the same time with.
Oh, gosh, dual wielding.
I think that's a double weapon, actually.
That'll work.
All right. Any, Alex, James, anything you guys want to shout out to?
We need people to start showing up to our awesome, if you're in Philly and you're not playing Starfinder with James, we'd really like you to. We need more people at Red Cap's Corner. We have a Warhorn. I guess we'll get a pair of them to put it in the thing, but please come and play with us.
Yes, go play.
I promise not to kill you, except when I kill you all the time.
I mean,
listen, we don't murder people that often. We just incinerate their limbs.
That's just Starfinder. That's not a big deal. A few hundred credits to solve that problem.
No, you don't even need regenerate. You just slap a robot right there.
It's the trauma that lasts.
It does. Yeah, Starfinder Society has tons of ways to chop off your body parts.
I got mine caught in a bear trap and almost got it ripped off inside of a hallway.
No, were you walking in a woods with no one around and your phone was dead and out of the corner of your eye you spotted him? Shut up.
All right, everyone. We're going to be calling this. I want to also shout out, of course, to our supporters on Patreon. It's only through your continued support of the No Direction Network that No Direction Beyond and all the other shows in the network are able to continue to come out, and the network is able to grow with soon some even more new announcements that you all should be happy to hear later. It's going to be later.
Soon. Oh, are we going to do the one that I really want you to announce?
Not yet. But
the one that we have the really pretty animation for.
Oh wait, that's already been announced.
But we haven't announced that. We haven't shown that. I really want to show it to people. Can we at least show it to our insiders and our backers?
Yes, our insiders will get to see that early. For those of you that put back at the level of the behind the scenes peek, expect to see some cool animation soon. As for the rest of you all, thank you all again for continuing to support the No Direction. Thank you, James, for coming back. Thank you, Alex, for being a guest. Jason, thank you for your time in promoting your products. And everyone, go beyond with No Direction.
Buy our stuff.
Come on. Stop it.